May 27th. Thank God it's Friday day, is what it is. We've got quite a bit to go through. Only one issue might be controversial. What I need now is a motion for the major introduction. Can you give us a brief summary of the major?
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, LC 3651 is relating to aggravated murder. It's sponsored by the Committee on Judiciary at the request of the Oregon Council of Police Associations and the Josephine County Sheriff, Dave Daniel. The measure would amend the aggravated murder section, the ORS 163.095, permitting an individual to be charged with aggravated murder if the victim was a reserve officer as defined in ORS 181.610.
I move we introduce that bill. Introduce 3651. Been a motion to adopt as committee bill 3651. Any objections? So ordered. We'll open a work session on HJR 31.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, HJR 31 comes to you from the Civil Subcommittee where it passed out April 27th and adopted the Dash 2 amendments. That resolution and the Dash 2 amendments propose an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow the House of Representatives to impeach certain elected or appointed state officials, specifies the grounds for impeachment, and it requires a trial by Senate, and also specifies the effect of impeachment. The Dash 2 amendments establish the procedures for impeachment.
A motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move HJR 31 to the floor with a due adopt.
Representative Thatcher has moved HJR 31 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Ackerman?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill hasn't, this measure hasn't improved one bit since we heard it before. It's probably the worst piece of legislation I've seen this session. It's totally unworkable, unpredictable, and will increase, I think, bipartisan strife in this legislative environment. Let me just itemize specifically what my objections are. The impeachment process goes as far as to allow the people to impeach department heads and on the lowest standard possible of conduct, which would be negligence. And I can see just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of frivolous claims being filed accusing apartment heads of negligence as they perform their duties. I also foresee the same amount of frivolous filings regarding judges. We hear a lot of folks coming before us that have had unfortunate results from the judicial system, justified or unjustified. But I think it's opens the floodgates to a flood of impeachment petitions against well-meaning public servants. It still does not have an impeachment process, as I see, that relates to legislators. And it's rather inconsistent for me to think that the people could, that we would allow the people to impeach department heads, the governor, the head commissioner of the Bureau of Labor, the attorney general, all of our circuit court judges, all of our Supreme Court judges, our tax court judge, our court of appeals judges, and we won't stand up the line ourselves and take the fire that has been built around this particular measure. I think that's totally inconsistent and totally bad policy. I think also it's rife for partisan political mischief, particularly during election of these people to public office. For example, I can certainly understand that in a contested race between an incumbent elected official and another party, that negative campaigning could come in right away and frivolous impeachment claims would be filed against the public official and be used in hit pieces to destroy that person's candidacy. I think that is, again, is not good public policy and is designed, I think, this act is designed to format more partisan politics, and for that reason, I think it's a totally bad proposition for the state. I think particularly, Mr. Chair, as all of us have strived for at every session I've been in this legislature, going on three now, we've all strived for bipartisan compromises and professionalism within our dealings. I think this opens up the whole area of partisanship, which should be avoided rather than fostered. So for those reasons and others that I could explain, I will I'll just close briefly and say this has my does not have my endorsement. If I could filibuster on the House floor, I would. I may do a Dalto or something like that to oppose it, but I will be on the floor opposing this if it passes out of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have one question of counsel. The last sentence in the staff measure summary referring to the Constitution, Article 2, Section 18 provides for a recall of any public officer. And does that public officer include legislators?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Mr. Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I happen to agree with a lot of what Representative Ackerman says. I will give this a courtesy vote out because I think the debate will be good for the body. But so.
Okay. Further clause?
Further comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much. I too will give a courtesy vote because I do think the discussion will provide merit, and I think that the issue of my concern of including legislators in some sort of reach is covered in the Constitution. Thank you.
Further discussion? President Thatcher.
Well, just a comment. I just an observation here. It seems like we're facilitating suing the pants off of businesses all in the name of, and maybe putting them out of business just to the cost of defense. And here we have an accountability piece, is what I see it as, that holds government officials accountable. And the reason we put up with all these tort actions against businesses is supposedly in the name of accountability. And I think this just brings it up to the level where we hold the government accountable as well.
Representative Ackerman?
No.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
No.
Vice Chair McPherson?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. HR 31 passes the floor with the Duma has amended recommendation. Representative Croft will be the carrier. Open work session on House Bill 2567.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2567 removes the 5% cap that juries may reduce a damage award by the non-use of a safety belt in a motor vehicle lawsuit. This bill previously passed out of the full committee and is now back before us because it was pulled from the floor. Under current law, evidence of the non-use of a seatbelt in a motor vehicle accident may only be admitted to mitigate the injured party's damages. That is, it cannot be used to determine comparative fault. The maximum amount that a jury may reduce the damages for a non-use of a seatbelt is 5% of what the plaintiff would otherwise be entitled. This bill removes that 5% cap. An example of a situation that may come up that was raised by one of the representatives was that if a drunk driver hit a car and say the plaintiffs who were hit were driving and they did not have their seatbelts on, in that case, theoretically, a jury could reduce damages, I guess, to nothing if, regardless of fault, if they decided to do so. As mentioned, this issue does come up, but there is a 5% cap in which the juries can reduce the damages. This bill would just allow juries to make that determination to reduce that, essentially to 100% of the damages if they thought that proper. Again, that's for non-use of a safety belt.
I'm going to pull this back to talk to a member that had some concern with the bill. I don't think he's particularly happy with it, but I think the debate that we had in committee I thought was pretty good to cover to justify the bill moving the floor. I'd like to have a motion to get it back on the floor.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2567 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 2567 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further debate? Questions?
Mr. Chair, do we have to take the dash threes?
It was as amended.
Are they already in the bill?
I believe so. They are.
The dash threes were in the bill when it originally passed out.
When it left. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Backman?
No.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excuse. Representative Ward?
No.
Vice Chair McPherson?
I'm sorry, no.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Bill fails. House Bill 2567.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for purposes of reconsideration of the vote on House Bill 2567.
Representative Pearson has moved that we suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2567. And that is not debatable. Those who are in favor, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excuse. Representative Ward? Sir? Excuse. Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
been suspended.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2567A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I thought we were voting on that. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
We didn't tell you.
Yeah, we'll get you there. And by way of explanation, I'm going to get a courtesy vote to get this out of committee because it was just a question of the people in attendance that were the issue of her failing here a moment ago. And I will be opposing the bill on the floor, but we need to move the process forward.
Okay, thank you. Reverend Fisher has moved House Bill 2567A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
No.
Representative Barker?
No.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excused. Representative Wirth? Excused. Mr. McPherson?
Aye.
Mr. Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2567 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Originally, wasn't Representative Garrard the carrier?
Yes.
That?
It's entirely up to you, Mr. Chair.
Do that and we'll have a discussion.
Okay.
Open a work session on House Bill 2591.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2591 prohibits persons from bringing a cause of action for food-related conditions against those involved with the selling of food. This provides exceptions for which a cause of action may be brought by those suffering from food-related conditions and sets out pleading requirements for actions regarding food-related conditions. The civil subcommittee adopted -1 amendments, and in the subcommittee there were some minor changes that needed to be made. Those are before you in the -4 amendments. This committee will need to adopt those. Specifically, there are three changes. One change is that it clarifies that the bill applies prospectively. Both the parties had agreed on that, and the language wasn't sufficient in the -1 amendments, so they fixed that. Second, the bill deletes a reference to a specific definition in the food in the Federal Food and Drug Cosmetic Act, so that the entire section may be referred to. And finally, there was a change to take out the word material, which described the violation that needed to be that plaintiffs needed to allege that was that defendants violated the law that defendants violated. When a plaintiff brings a cause of action for such a food-related injury, the plaintiff is required to plead, among other things, the facts alleged to constitute the violation of the law, and the term material in front of violation had been left in, so the third change was that term was omitted to avoid future litigation over what a material violation may be when just a violation would be necessary. Again, those were the -4 amendments, and there was consensus on those between the parties involved.
Representative Ackerman?
Yes, Chair. I'll move the -4 amendments be incorporated within the House Bill 2591.
Representative Ackerman has moved the -4 amendments to the House Bill 2591. Any objections? In the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 2591 as amended be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 2591 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions, objections?
Mr. Chair, if I could make a comment just to kind of an explanation of my vote. I'm going to be a no vote on this, and it's just I realize this is not a monumental bill, and the issue it's engaging is not a particularly troublesome one, but I just think that the general trend toward trying to carve out particular areas of activity and give immunity in those situations is not a good public policy, so I'll be a no.
Okay, thank you. Anything further? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative
Barker?
Aye.
Representative
Garrard?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Excused. Representative
Wirth?
No.
Vice Chairman McPherson?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2591 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Ackerman, can you carry?
I will.
Open work session on House Bill 2566.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2566 provides that the Department of Human Services must encourage the use of mediation in cases involving a parent or guardian in a juvenile dependency proceeding in which the child is taken into protective custody or placed in substitute care. This bill is a compromise between the parties who originally brought forward House Bill 3078. That bill required DHS to offer arbitration in certain cases regarding protective custody and substitute care. That bill had some significant problems, and the parties came together and worked out some compromises. This bill was used because the relating clause in the original bill was not broad enough. It related to arbitration only in this bill, as it now is, relates to mediation. So that is why they used House Bill 2566.
There was just a dash one amendments?
It's just a dash one amendments, and they have been adopted by the Civil Subcommittee.
Okay. Motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2566 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Chair of the floor is to move House Bill 2566 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any objections, questions? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excuse. Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Persons?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2566 moves the floor as amended with the due pass. Representative Flores, can you be the carrier?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair. However, if this is Representative Anderson's original bill, he might be honored to carry it.
All right. Go ahead. I talked to him. He could be the carrier.
I talked with Representative Anderson. He would make that request.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 272.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 272 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Board of Governors. This measure does several things with respect to rule changes regarding the nominating petitions for elections of the Board of Governors, recall of members of the Board of Governors. It allows the board to utilize the State Lawyers Assistance Committee to monitor and supervise lawyers placed on bar probation. And it also eliminates a requirement that in order to collect from a bar fund victims of dishonest lawyers, that the lawyer must maintain an office in Oregon. It changes it so that it doesn't require the lawyer to have an office in Oregon, but just to be a member of the Oregon State Bar. We heard testimony on this from Sylvia Stevens. There are no amendments. The measure passed the Senate 23-1 with 6 excused.
Okay, have a motion on the bill? For Ms. Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate Bill 272A be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved Senate Bill 272A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections?
Representative
Ackerman? Aye. Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excuse.
Representative
Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Persons?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair
Krieger?
Aye.
Senate Bill 272 moves the floor with a due pass, and it will be placed on this consent calendar. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 275A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 275 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Estate Planning Section. This is a comprehensive measure that enacts the Oregon Uniform Trust Code. The subcommittee adopted a dash 3 amendment that made a minor linguistic change to the section of the code that deals with pet trusts. Otherwise, what this measure does is basically create a comprehensive gap filler statutory framework that gives specific default provisions to trusts where the trust document itself does not address a specific issue. In all cases, it was testified to that deference was given to existing Oregon law where there were differences between the Oregon law and the Uniform Trust Code. The reality is there is not much Oregon law with respect to trusts, and that it was testified to that that was the impetus for this statute. As it is now, trust law largely relies on the common law, largely relies on case law and learned treatises. This was the product of a work group that had been meeting since 2002, legal experts in this area, and the measure passed the Senate 27-2 with one excused.
Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 275B as amended to the floor with a DuPage recommendation.
Representative Girard has moved Senate Bill 275A as amended to the floor with a DuPage recommendation. Any questions, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excuse. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 275A, as amended, moves the floor with a due pass, and we will place it on the consent calendar also. Open a work session on Senate Bill 277.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 277 also comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Estate Planning Section. This measure deals with custodianships, money held in trust, if you will, although I don't mean that as a term of art, on behalf of minors. This corrects a terminology error that was created from the last legislative session. In the last legislative session, a bill was passed and enacted that would allow the custodian to delay the disbursement of the funds held in custodianship until the beneficiary, the youth, turned 25. But there were other sections of the statutory scheme that defined minor as a person under the age of 21. So there was a conflict between the 2003 law that said you can wait until 25 and the pre-existing definition of minor. This corrects it by using the word beneficiary instead of the word minor, and makes it clear that the disbursement can be delayed until age 25. This measure passed the Senate 24-1 with four excused, and there were no amendments.
And that was in our...
That was in the civil subcommittee on the 23rd, and there was no testimony in opposition to that measure at that time, and the only witness was Chris Klein, who was a member of the Oregon State Bar State Planning Committee.
Okay, you have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 277 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
President Flores has moved Senate Bill 277... I didn't have an amendment.
No.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excuse. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 277 has moved to the floor. Senate Bill 277 with a due pass recommendation, and that also will be put on the consent calendar. Representative Worth.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to recognize my daughter, and she's really embarrassing me, so I'm sure she'll be happy to have her pointed out individually. Megan, stand up. Stand. This is Megan, my daughter, and she's got her class and Ms. Walter's class. There's two classes from Garfield Elementary School here today, and I wanted to get them in and see a committee hearing since we ran late on the floor, because I'm going to give them a quiz afterwards. And I told them that this is really where all the laws are made. So, and Ms. Winograd and Ms. Rodriguez are their teachers, and they braved all these children up here today. So I appreciate you letting us have a few seconds.
Well, yeah, welcome very much, kids, and hopefully the adults up here will be on their good behavior while you're in the room. Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 278A.
Chair? Excuse me. Sorry. Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 278A comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Health Law Section. This bill would define the individuals who may act as a personal representative for purposes of access to protected health information of a decedent. It applies to cases where no personal representative has been appointed by the court or where a personal representative has been appointed but was subsequently discharged. What this bill addresses is HIPAA privacy information. Under HIPAA right now, there are very limited circumstances in which individuals can gain personal health information of a decedent. You need to be essentially a court-appointed personal representative. And this law would create a prioritized list of individuals who, in the case of no personal representative, would be able to access the protected health information under this measure. We discussed at the Civil Subcommittee the fact that this ensures that family members will be able to have access to decedent's protected health information that could be intended to be used for purposes of processing insurance claims or obtaining important family medical information. We also clarified from the witnesses that it would be the healthcare provider who would be in a position to verify the identity of the person making the request for disclosure, and that is the current practice in any case. There are no amendments to the measure. The measure passed the Senate 29-0 with one excused.
Representative Burrard.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 278A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Burrard has moved Senate Bill 275A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Discussion?
278.
Representative
Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Burrard?
Aye.
Representative Thacker, excuse, Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 278A has moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Garrard, can you carry, please?
I will, Mr. Chair.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 284.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 284 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Procedure and Practice Committee. This bill would extend the statute of limitations in limited circumstances if an attorney dies before the expiration of the time allowed for the commencement of the action. The idea behind this is that if an individual has retained an attorney, if there is a specific letter of engagement, retainer agreement between the client and the attorney, and the attorney passes away before the attorney has filed the claim for which they've been retained to file, the client may not know that that has happened. The client may not know that the claim has not been filed. And if that happens and the claim would otherwise be barred over the statute of limitations, this would give that client the ability to extend the statute for a period of 6 months so they could retain other counsel and get their claim filed without having it barred by the statute of limitations. This was presented to the Civil Subcommittee by Counsel Sam Sears. It passed in the Senate by 25-5. I should also note that there was discussion on the Senate side with respect to how this would apply to a case with an entire law firm in other words, questions were raised, well, if there are many lawyers in a firm, should this apply? And the witnesses and the members of the Senate committee pointed out their intent that this would only apply if the retainer agreement, which is specified in the bill, was between the client and a specific lawyer of that firm or obviously a solo practitioner.
No amendments?
No amendments.
A motion on the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 284 be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved Senate Bill 284 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We've heard the discussion.
Actually, I do have a question, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. A question for counsel. Would it be the case that if the statute of limitations were not about to run and the attorney died, could this have the effect of shortening the statute of limitations?
Chair Krieger, Representative McPherson, I'm looking over the bill and I might not understand your question. I can't think of a hypothetical where that would show.
Well, let's say that some a person has a personal injury claim, and they are hire an attorney-client relationship where they sole a practitioner or attorney. It's 2 years away because of the accident that just happened. Then that attorney dies. Mm-hmm. Could it be that one would that would shorten what is otherwise a nearly 2 year statute of limitations to 180 days?
Chair Krieger, Representative McPherson, my read of this is that this would only operate to suspend the statute of limitation, and I see that in. Just give me one moment.
Yeah, me too.
Section 2, paren 3, perhaps.
Thank you. I'd want to give that a little more thought. Representative McPherson.
I'm sorry, I didn't give you alert to this advance, and actually somebody had just mentioned this to me in passing of this question, and I hadn't refocused until just now, and I apologize for bringing it up here on the fly, but I have to say my reading of the bill is that it could literally operate to shorten the statute in that case.
Chair Krieger, Representative McPherson, I had not thought of that before, but I actually see how that could be read that way. I think it was certainly not the intent of anybody bringing it forward, but I follow your point.
Well, I would entertain a motion to take the motion back to pass, and we'll get it back into committee to get an amendment on that.
Okay. I so move.
Anyone object to the motion? We'll take it back. I'll close the work session on it, and we'll try to get an amendment to take care of that little point.
Good catch for a
minute. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That is one of the advantages of having a few attorneys around.
For the few, right?
Thank you. We'll open work session of Senate Bill 35.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 35 comes to you from the Employment Department, and this would authorize the Employment Department to issue a warrant to collect amounts due pursuant to either a money judgment awarded by a court or a judgment awarded based on or a circumstance where the Employment Department could seek a money judgment based on misrepresentation by a person who has received benefits from the department. My understanding from the witnesses who testified on this in the Civil Subcommittee is that currently the Employment Department only has authority to issue a warrant for money owed in order to collect unemployment insurance taxes or benefit overpayments. This would expand this to the two limited circumstances of collecting money awarded pursuant to a money judgment or in a case where they could seek a court order based on misrepresentation by a person who has received benefits. There were no amendments to this measure. The measure passed Senate 26-0 with 4 excused.
Have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate Bill 35 be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ackerman has moved Senate Bill 35 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. For the discussion, objections? Not call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excuse. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 35 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we have it marked for the consent calendar. Open a work session on Senate Bill 94A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 94A is sponsored by the Criminal Justice Commission and was put together with the substantial assistance of the Association of Police Chiefs, the Department of Human Services, members of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and members of the Juvenile Rights Project. What this measure does is modify the system of mandatory cross-reporting of child abuse reports between law enforcement and the Department of Human Services. The current law is that reports of child abuse received by either law enforcement or DHS must be immediately cross-reported to the other agency. And this measure would set up a two-tiered system by which certain reports of child abuse must be reported within 24 hours, and all other reports of child abuse must be reported in 10 days. The bill sets up a advisory committee that must promulgate rules by the first of the year, determining what sorts of reports have to fit into the 24-hour category and what all other reports are that fit into the 10-day category. The advisory committee must be made up of members of DHS, members of law enforcement, members of multidisciplinary teams, and other interested parties. There are no amendments that came out of the civil subcommittee on this bill, and the measure passed the Senate 28-0 with two excused.
Was there any objections or testimony objecting?
Chair Krieger, at the civil subcommittee, there was no testimony in opposition to this. In the Senate Judiciary Committee, there was objection to the original form of the bill. The original form of the bill would have relieved law enforcement and DHS from having to immediately cross-report every single report of abuse, and would have only required them to immediately report serious physical injury, sexual abuse type reports of abuse, and would have given them discretion to decide what other reports of abuse to report or not. And the Juvenile Rights Project, through Julie McFarlane, a senior attorney, came and testified in opposition to that, and it was in response to that opposition that Chair Burdick put together the work group that comprised of Julie McFarlane, Craig Prinz, Una Swanson from DHS, Chief Bob Tardiff of the Newburgh Police, and myself. And that work group put together this two-tiered system whereby we guarantee that every report of child abuse still needs to be cross-reported, but we give the DHS folks and the law enforcement folks the ability to triage, if you will, better than what they have to do now, where you get one category that's an immediate must be cross-reported within 24 hours, and another category that must be cross-reported within 10 days. The rules will set out what sorts of reports fit into each category, and we heard testimony in the civil sub that the reports of physical abuse and sexual abuse are intended to be in the 24-hour category, and the reports of non-urgent protective issues such as dirty house, and I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are many others. For example, old reports of abuse where the alleged abuser is no longer has access to the child. That would be another example of the 10-day not requiring immediate reporting, but still needs to be called to somebody's attention.
Okay. Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 921B to the floor with a pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 94A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
That's right. That's what you meant. Yes, I thought we didn't have an amendment.
Any discussion? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Senate Bill 94A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Flores, would you please carry the bill?
Yes, sir.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 921A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, this bill comes to you from the Oregon Law Commission. This bill would codify the holding of Zuckert versus Fanning, an Oregon Supreme Court case, with respect to the rights of indigent parents in privately initiated adoption proceedings. Right now, in privately initiated adoption proceedings, all that is required by way of notice to the biological parents is service of a... pardon me, I need to get the word right. service of a citation is a legal term, does not require any sort of response at all. Under this measure, what would be required instead of the citation is a summons. The difference is the summons is a legal document that gives the biological parent instructions about what is going to happen in the private adoption proceeding, the advice of rights that they, if they are indigent, have the right to court-appointed counsel under the case that I cited earlier, and notice that if they do not respond to the summons and show up on the appointed date, that the court will take steps without them, and it prevents them from going back and trying to controvert what happens. So this is a protection for both adopted parents in some respects and for biological parents in other respects. And there are no, there was an amendment on the Senate side that added an issue with respect to notice. Pardon me one moment. It did. It allowed, the original bill provided that the when personal service of the biological parents could not be accomplished, that the parties could do notice by publication. Mm-hmm. And the amendment on the Senate side added to that and saying that under applicable rule of civil procedure that you could also do notice by posting, which is a more economically efficient means of notice. It still requires good cause. It still requires court approval. And this would obviously be in a case where the personal service was not able to be accomplished. There were no amendments, however, in the civil subcommittee.
Question. Counsel, I have noted that we adopted dash twos and dash threes in civil sub.
Chair Krieger, Representative Flores, thank you. You are correct. I stand corrected. There were two amendments, and I saw Ingrid Swenson waving at me furiously, but I was ignoring her because I was worried I was talking about the wrong bill.
It's Friday.
We've all been there.
It's Friday. That can happen.
Representative Flores, thank you for pointing that out.
Either that or I'm in the wrong.
No. There were two amendments that the civil sub did consider and did approve, and they have been adopted and combined in a dash A4 that is before you. And this dealt with this issue of publication or posting. And then the other issue that it dealt with that Ms. Swenson was waving at me about, no doubt, was the issue with respect to substitution of appointed counsel. And it clarifies that if a party would ask for substitution of the appointed counsel, that the court must follow the rules and procedures set forth under OPDS, Public Defense Services Commission rules, and that would make it consistent with dependency cases and termination of parental rights cases.
I don't feel bad. I can remember someone giving a floor speech one time on the wrong bill.
That's what I was afraid I was
they
doing.
They got embarrassed too. Have a motion on the bill?
Do we need to adopt the dash fours if
yes,
this community?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 921.
Representative Flores moves that we adopt the dash 4 amendments into House Bill 921. Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 921A to the floor. Is it A or B now? 921 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Ms. Flores has moved Senate Bill 921A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further comments or objections? Call the roll.
Representative Hackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excuse. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 921 moves to the floor as amended with a due pass. And Representative Flores, can you carry?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 324A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We're going to give Joel Leary a break for a few minutes here. I have one bill here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 324A comes to you from Senator Walker. It prohibits a public body from entering into a settlement of compromise. It requires the terms and conditions of settlement of compromise be confidential
unless, one, federal law requires confidentiality, or two, court orders the terms and conditions of settlement of compromise to be confidential after the court finds in writing that specific privacy interests of a person under 18 years of age or a victim of sexual abuse outweighs the public interest in knowing the terms and conditions. Applies to actions and mediations commenced on or after the effective date of the bill, which will be January 1, 2006, if passed. Currently, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a court may only order confidentiality if the court determines in writing that specific privacy interests of a private individual outweigh the public interest in the terms and settlement of compromise. This comes to you mainly because of the subcommittee heard testimony as it relates to the state hospital.
Okay.
Some abuse situations there.
Let's have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 324 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Barker has moved Senate Bill 324 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Excuse. Representative Wirtz?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 324A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Garrard will be the carrier. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 36A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 36A is a bill that comes to you from the Criminal Justice Commission, and this would provide for a statutory mechanism for continuing criminal court subpoenas for witnesses when the criminal case has been set over. The way this would work is that if a case has been set over and the witnesses previously have been validly served, that is by personal service under the statute, the parties or the court could continue those subpoenas in one of two ways. One would be by notifying the witness by certified registered mail or by express mail of the new date, and the burden would be on the proponent of the subpoena to make that notice. And the other would be if the court announces the continuation of the subpoena in court in the presence of the witness. This is an efficiency issue. The alternative under current law is that the parties would need to personally serve the witnesses if the case was carried over in order for the subpoena to be valid.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 36A be moved to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson has moved Senate Bill 36A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion, objections? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Aye. Representative Wirtz?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 36 A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Olson, can you be the carrier?
Yes, sir.
Open a work session of Senate Bill 39A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 39A comes to you from the Psychiatric Security Review Board. What this bill would do is require the trial court to state on the record the mental disease or defect that was established as a basis for a guilty except for insanity verdict. Further, it would require the court, after the entry of a guilty except for insanity verdict, to and before committing the defendant to the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, to order a psychological or psychiatric examination of the defendant if no such evaluation was provided to the court prior to trial. We heard testimony on this bill and the impetus for this bill from Mary Claire Buckley of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, which was to ensure that appropriate individuals were coming within the jurisdiction of the board and to avoid the situations that occasionally happen where individuals who are found guilty except for insanity and committed to the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board turn around once they're in the custody of the PSRB and say, I am not mentally ill. I don't have a psychological disease or defect for which you have jurisdiction to hold me. These two provisions would give the PSRB more coverage to ensure that there is a good record made in the trial court to go back and see what mental disease or defect the court stated on the record and to make sure that there was a psychological evaluation performed in every case.
Okay. This is a good bill. Might affect us psychiatrically. Old people. Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 39A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 39A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Patrick, excuse. Representative Wirtz?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 39A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative McPherson, can you carry, please?
Thank you. I will, Mr. Chair.
Open the work.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to see that there is counsel carrying that bill.
Yes, they can do the in-depth analysis of the questions you're going to ask.
Right.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 89A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 89A comes to you from the Department of Corrections, and this creates two criminal offenses, custodial sexual misconduct in the first degree and custodial sexual misconduct in the second degree. The measure does have an emergency clause. There is an amendment, one single amendment, that was adopted by the Civil Subcommittee to this bill. And as amended, what this bill does is prohibits sexual contact in varying degrees between corrections, probation staff, police officers, and inmates, supervisees, and people who have been arrested. The first degree offense applies to sexual intercourse. The second degree offense, which is a misdemeanor, the first degree is a felony. The second degree offense applies to sexual contact short of intercourse. This was the product of a lot of work from the Department of Corrections, which testified on this bill, with input from Amnesty International, the ACLU, and other interested parties. The measure passed the Senate 25-0 with 5 excused.
A motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 89 be to the floor with a due pass.
As amended.
As amended.
Sorry, yeah. Okay. Representative Barker has moved Senate Bill 89A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Patrick, excuse. Representative Wirtz?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 89A as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Barker, could you be the carrier, please?
Yes, thank you.
Open work session on Senate Bill 114.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 114 comes to you from the Department of Transportation. This is the measure that would increase the screening fee, currently $90 to $150, that a person must pay after being either convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants or entering a diversion program for driving under the influence of intoxicants. The screening fee is a payment for purposes of the initial assessment to determine what level of treatment is appropriate for the individual. We also heard testimony that the screeners in some counties also monitor the person's progress while either in diversion or on probation and make reports to the court. This fee, currently $90, was last raised in 1989. The measure, there are no amendments, and the measure passed Senate 24-4 with 2 excused.
Have a motion on the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 114 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson has moved Senate Bill 114 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Questions? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excuse. Representative Wirtz?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Bill 114 passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. You want to take care of
it? I can take it.
Yeah, I have Representative Olson to the carrier. Open work session on Senate Bill 203.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 203 comes to you from the Department of Justice. This is a bill that is in response to a specific case out of the Court of Appeals, State versus Walker, that has to do with the time limitation or the statute of limitations for felony and misdemeanor sex offenses against children. The current law regarding the statute of limitations for these certain offenses is a three-part alternative time limits. One of the alternatives is that the prosecution must be commenced within 6 years if a felony, 4 years if a misdemeanor, after the offense is reported to law enforcement or another governmental agency. This bill has to do with that other governmental agency piece, and what it would do is delete the language other governmental agency and insert the term Department of Human Services. The impetus for this is that other governmental agency has been interpreted in State v. Walker, the Court of Appeals case, to include public school teachers, and that gave rise to a situation where a child sex abuse prosecution was barred because the complainant reported or disclosed the alleged abuse to a public school teacher, and it was not investigated by law enforcement, and prosecution was not brought within the applicable period of time under that last prong of the statute of limitations. So this would ensure, according to the sponsors, this would ensure that the statute of limitations does not start to run until the disclosure is reported to the agencies that are most appropriate to be able to investigate the criminal, alleged criminal conduct, law enforcement or the Department of Human Services. No amendments, and this measure passed the Senate 27-0 with three excused.
A motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 203 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 203 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Questions, objections? Call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barnes?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrari?
Aye.
Representative Patrick Spews? Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 203 moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And Representative McPherson, would you carry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Call for a work session on Senate Bill 293.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 293 comes to you from the Criminal Justice Commission. This would repeal a statute that's currently on the books that requires local public safety coordinating councils, or LPSCs, to submit biennial reports to the Criminal Justice Commission regarding the details of the county's early disposition programs. We did not have testimony on this at the Civil Subcommittee. However, in the Senate Judiciary Committee, the testimony was that this is a totally unnecessary provision. The LPSCs, except for two counties, are not providing these reports in any case, and the information that the two counties that do provide the reports give to the Criminal Justice Commission is virtually useless. This passed the Senate unanimously.
I think that was the term that was used in Senate Judiciary.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 293 be sent to the floor with a due pass.
Attorney Barker has moved Senate Bill 293 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
There she is.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrari?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, excused. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 293 moves the floor with a due pass recommendation, and we'll put it on the consent calendar. Open a work session on Senate Bill 370.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 378 comes to you from the Oregon Public Defense Services Commission. This would preserve attorney-client privilege for communications that are made to the Office of Public Defense Services for purposes of making a complaint against a court-appointed attorney. The Criminal Subcommittee heard testimony from Ingrid Swenson of OPDS, indicating that this is a provision that is necessary to facilitate OPDS's investigation of complaints regarding court-appointed attorneys. It can do so under this measure in a way that in which the client does not have to choose between risking a waiver of attorney-client privilege by disclosing information, or for that matter, the attorney does not have to risk a waiver, and allows OPDS to still fully investigate those claims while remaining, keeping the information disclosed within the umbrella of attorney-client privilege. There are no amendments to the bill. The measure passed the Senate 28 to 2.
Okay. Motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 370A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 370A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Patrick Skews? Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 370A moves to the floor with a due pass and will be placed on the consent calendar. Open work session on Senate Bill 371.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 371 is the flip side of Senate Bill 370, also from the OPDS. This would preserve attorney-client privilege for communications made to OPDS for purposes of seeking pre-authorization for non-routine fees and expenses. This, again, this is a situation where court-appointed counsel are asking OPDS to use public expenses to fund extraordinary expenses such that are reasonable and necessary for the defense, such as the use of experts. In doing so, it's the burden of the attorney making the request to provide facts to OPDS that the expenses are reasonable and necessary. And in doing so, attorneys may find themselves required to disclose otherwise privileged information. This makes clear that if an attorney does provide such privileged communication, that there is no waiver of the attorney-client privilege for that information being passed on to OPDS. The measure passed the Senate 28-2. There were no amendments.
Motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 371 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any objections? Discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher Excuse? Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 371 moves the floor with a due pass and will be placed on the consent calendar. And this is the one we've been looking for. Open a work session on Senate Bill 547A.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 547A comes to you from the Eugene Police Department via Senator Floyd Prozonsky. And this measure would expand the crime of criminal impersonation of a police officer. Currently, that crime applies to individuals, I believe individuals who display a badge. This would expand it to the wearing of law enforcement uniforms that are substantially similar to an actual law enforcement uniform that bear words such as police, sheriff, state trooper, or law enforcement. It also adds a mental element to the offense. The offense must be committed in order to be a crime with the intent to obtain a benefit or to injure or defraud another. We heard testimony from Senator Prozonsky on this bill and need for it in the Criminal Subcommittee. The measure passed the Senate 25-0 with 5 excused. There are no amendments.
A motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill.
Excuse me. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I just have a quick question. Does this apply, would this apply to also the military MPs?
Chair Krieger, Representative Worth, I just didn't hear your question.
Would this also apply to Department of Army MPs, military MPs?
Is your question, could MPs be caught criminally liable for this, or
impersonating an MP?
Representative Worth, my opinion would be that it is unlikely that that would be applicable to military police. Let me double check this.
the definition of peace.
Yeah, I would want to go back to the definition of law enforcement uniform, and it's defined under the bill as clothing that bears words such as police, sheriff, state trooper, law enforcement, or clothing that is an official uniform or substantially similar to an official uniform of a law enforcement unit that would make it reasonably likely that a person would believe the wearer is a peace officer. I would want to look at the definition of peace officer in the code that I don't have at my fingertips. If the definition of peace officer is broad enough to include military police, I think there'd be a good argument that it is, but I'm seeing heads shaking from learned counsel Bill Taylor and learned counsel Ingrid Swenson and Representative Olson, who has experience in that field much greater than mine, that it's not.
Any further comments?
Then, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 547A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson has moved Senate Bill 547A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further comments? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative Fasser, excuse. Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chairman
Person?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Senate Bill 547A moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representing Mr. Pearson, would you carry?
I'd be pleased to, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garrard.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention that based on the tremendous number of bills that this committee handled during this last several hours, that the civil sub would appear to be handling many more complex bills of substantive substance than the criminal sub. Just an observation on my part.
Are you carrying any of those difficult bills?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're adjourned.